leading the NFL in points per game, while the Jets defense allows the fewest.
Gronkowski's got a touchdown!
They collide this Sunday with first place in the AFC East on the line. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio.
We're coming to you from the DraftKings.com podcasting studios. DraftKings.com, America's one-day fantasy sports site, where it's like a new season every time you play. DraftKings.com.
From the worldwide leader in sports,
we got to get some kind of technology.
It's the most popular sport in the world.
God!
From an American perspective.
I'm an awesome soccer player.
This is Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Over the Ball. I'm Kevin Flynn. On today's show, we check in with ESPN investigative reporter Jeremy Schapp. He has been following this FIFA cluster jam quite closely. Earlier this year, he had a special on E60 on Sepp Blatter and FIFA corruption. He'll be here to give us an update on the legal goings and comings and goings. Yeah, I guess goings first, comings first. Comings and goings is how it works. What may be up next for our beloved FIFA. Also on the show, soccer specialist and media consultant Ben Grossman will be talking to us. Ben is back from England and the big Soccer X convention, where he had a one-on-one sit-down interview with Don Garber, one that actually made some news here and abroad. And finally, we talked to David Goldstein. Last week was, of course, Think Taylor Concussion Awareness Week. Well, David is a young man who recognized through his own troubles and experiences that not enough was being done in regard to concussions and awareness and aftercare. And he decided to do something about it. Very cool. So some good soccer stuff coming your way. So let me get my first touch in.
The first touch.
Well, the Pope's whirlwind tour of the United States is over. He's headed back to Rome. Huge crowds, literally flocking to Washington, D.C., New York City, Philadelphia. All great MLS towns, by the way. The lesson is, if you want the Pope to come to your town, you gotta have an MLS franchise. And he's a soccer fan, by the way, too. But it was like a U2 concert to the 10th power. Huge, huge crowds everywhere this guy went. But it was like, instead of U2, there's just one band member. It's Francis. All eyes were focused on him. And it was wonderful watching all these people get together from all walks of life. To listen to this man up there preaching humility and grace, preaching kindness to your fellow man. The poor, the oppressed, all about social justice, all great stuff. And a reminder of the good things that an institution can do, especially when you have an inspiring leader. And this is an institution that had some problems and missteps throughout the years, but one man stepped up and seems to be making a difference. So in the middle of all this good, all this great feel-good Francis stuff, who am I to judge, humility, grace, dignity, and the way the man carries himself, we get word from the head of another institution who was doing the exact opposite, not facing up to the past, the mistakes of the past, not admitting anything is wrong. As he continues to try and hang on, the man continues to fiddle as Rome burns. I am talking, of course, about Sepp Blatter. Dude cannot take a hint. That should be the movie. On the other hand, he's on the other end of the spectrum from Francis. This is a man who is taking the great game, our game, the world's game, and he has treated it like it's his own. He will decide when a law has been broken. He will decide who will be the next head of FIFA. He will decide when he will leave the stage. Well, guess what? You're no Pope Francis, dude. You are going down. If there's one thing that I can assure you is that the long arm of the American Justice Department is tightening its noose, and it couldn't happen soon enough. Loretta Lynch is coming for you. And not only that, the Swiss and the American authorities. So must kill him, too, that it's a woman who's taking him down. It's probably, he thinks it's probably because of field turf. He made the Women World Cup players play on field turf and told him to wear short shorts because it would increase the amount of viewers. But now the Swiss are after him too. You know, how corrupt do you have to be in a fiduciary matters, financial mismanagement, for the Swiss to come after you? Drop their cups of hot chocolate and army knives and come after you. A lot. You have to be doing a lot wrong. This should be fun to watch in the coming days. I'm no detective, but this will not end well. All right, that's my first touch. Let me get to my starting 11.
The starting 11.
All right, he's a sports writer, a reporter, and an author. He's an 8-time Emmy Award winner. His work, I can't even believe we have him. His work on E60.
Nine
now. Oh, we got to update this. 9 Emmy Awards. But who's counting but you and your mother? He had a special on E60 a while back in May, about Sepp Blatter. Took an in-depth look at Sepp Blatter, the man that was labeled at that time the most powerful man in the world of sports. Not sure if that still applies. He's here to update us. Welcome back to Over the Ball, Jeremy Schapp. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Kevin?
Good. So in the words of Alice in Wonderland, curiouser and curiouser this thing gets. It's just like a, an onion. They keep peeling back levels, and there's more dirt under there.
No, I mean, it's like an episode of Law and Order. You know, the suspects, they think they're in the clear, and then, you know, the detectives show up again, and that's what's been going on at FIFA. You know, they had the raid back in May, which made so much news, not just the 14 guys who got arrested, but the raid at FIFA headquarters. And then last week they showed up again at FIFA headquarters as there's an executive committee meeting going on. There's supposed to be a press conference taking place, and Sepp Blatter goes upstairs to his office, and the Swiss authorities are there and spend the next several hours interrogating him and Platini.
Yeah, how do we pronounce that? Platini or Platini?
You know, I hear it both ways. I guess Platini would be the French way, but yeah. Of course he's ethnically Italian, and that would be Platini.
That's like a math problem, Jeremy. So, we live in the States. We'll just keep it real here.
I guess if you think of Michelle as French, which of course he is by birth and legally and represent the national team, it would be Platini. But if you think about where his parents come from, it would be Platini.
See, so, it gets confusing. We'll call him Michael Plate yeah, for our intents. Hey, so it looks like, you know, I got very frustrated originally before the first raid, and then said, oh, well, they really are working on things. The U.S. District Attorney's Office, you know, the federal, the feds, and then I'm thinking nothing's happening again, and Blatter, by the fact that he stayed in there and he started to hint about maybe sticking around, believe it or not, and just when I feel dejected again, another shoe drops. So this executive committee meets. They were like in a basement, apparently, and then they come up.
Yeah, that's where they've got their Dr. Strangelove meeting room. It's really terrific. I mean, you know, they've got all of this stuff there that just kind of adds to the impression that they are this untouchable, you know, extra national organization. You know, like it's. Spectre.
Yeah, it's like a Jason Ludlum, like Robert Ludlum book. I think Platini is this guy. He's like this evil, you know, you can see him with the pinky in his mouth, you know, $1 million.
So now, you know, there's actually a criminal investigation that has commenced against Blatter. I mean, it seemed apparent that they were looking into it, but there's a legal distinction between, you know, just investigating and what they are saying is the commencement of criminal proceedings against Blatter. And they specifically said he's being investigated for criminal mismanagement and misappropriation, either of which, if he's found guilty, he could go to jail for. And specifically, mismanagement applies to the $600,000 contract that he gave Jack Warner and the Caribbean Football Union to sell World Cup TV rights in the region, which were worth $20 million.
Oh, yeah.
So that's mismanagement. And then the misappropriation...
to say the least, about, mismanagement. A dereliction of fiduciary responsibility to the 100th power.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of this stuff, though, right, is open to interpretation. We see all the time in business, you know, guys, you know, organizations make sweetheart deals with particular partners or suppliers or vendors, you know, in the hopes of something else coming to fruition later on. I don't know how easy it's going to be to actually prove that there was any criminal wrongdoing. And then the misappropriation is about our friend Mr. Platini, who apparently got a $2 million check signed off by Sepp Blatter in 2011 for work that he did back in 1999 to 2002.
Yeah, that's an invoice you forget to deliver, Jeremy. You know, like, you got a $2 million invoice. You might want to collect on that. I'm going to wait 9 years.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, Michelle's a very busy guy.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, it seemed like Platini, with the support of Europe and Asia, was on his way to becoming Blatter's successor, and maybe he still is. But now that he is being investigated, you know, there's more turmoil, if you can believe it, even more turmoil in the world of FIFA.
Well, I think it gives light to motive. You know, I mean, you know that he was dirty, Blatter, but you didn't have anything to prove it. But here's a real cause and effect. I mean, he has a sweetheart deal with Jack Warner so that Jack Warner, you know, will give him his vote no matter what he does. And he does the same thing with Platini. It seems to me, with the timing, that he said to Platini, look, I'm going to run one more time. Here's $2 million. Vote for me. You're in next time, right?
Well, that certainly is one way that you could read the evidence that we have now. I mean, remember, between Warner and Platini, they control about 90 member states. Just between those two guys, you're talking about almost enough votes to win any election you want in the General Congress. CONCACAF is, what, 35 countries? Europe is about, what, 53, something like that, depending or not if you include Gibraltar, which sometimes counts, sometimes doesn't. So you're talking about, you know, kingmakers,
right,
in these guys, Warner and Platini. So, you know, that's the way business was conducted for a very long time. Favors were traded. This is the way that the business was run at FIFA. You know, the question remains, though, you know, what is just horse trading and what is criminal misappropriation? What is criminal mismanagement?
And how it varies from country to country, right, Jeremy? I mean, and even not just culturally, but ethically.
Yeah, and, all, you know, it's only going to matter here, you know, what they think in Switzerland. But, you know, as we've seen, the Swiss have been uncharacteristically aggressive.
I know.
Prosecuting this. They, you know, we've talked about this before. There is a new attitude in Switzerland about corporate malfeasance. You know, it's not the place anymore where, you know, corporate wrongdoers can hide their ill-gotten gains.
Right. It used to be a national pastime in Switzerland, right? I mean, that, you know, so they're changing it. And I think they're embarrassed by Blatter, don't you?
Oh, there's no doubt they're embarrassed by FIFA. I mean, FIFA and Blatter are, you know, the global standard for mismanagement and corporate corruption and wrongdoing. And, you know, that's not how Switzerland wants to be viewed. Blatter, of course, is a Swiss national. FIFA is a Swiss organization. Things, though, I think are changing in Switzerland, and FIFA is going to have to change, obviously, too.
Well, we hope so. I mean, you know, and it seems like he hasn't traveled since the last raid, and he's staying in Switzerland.
Well, not to anywhere that he could be extradited. He was in Russia. he was too busy to make it to Canada, you know, for the Women's World Cup.
Right.
Where I'm sure he would have been warmly embraced anyway.
Yeah, for playing on the field turf. The women were loving that one.
Yeah, look, this is long ago entered the realm of satire and parody. I mean, without trying. I mean, this is pretty farcical. It's amazing to think how much things have changed, though, in just the last 4 or 5 months.
And how about it being us that are driving the bus, baby? I love it. The United States. Well, they'll think there are all kinds of ulterior motives, but Loretta Lynch is just coming for him. Because, look, Jeremy, I think they suspended Jerome Valcke, which I didn't think they would do. Now, he's going to be maybe in the prosecutor's pockets, and we'll talk about Blatter because he can't be happy about it. So you have an executive committee, an ethics committee, which is an oxymoron at FIFA. But I doubt they're going to suspend Blatter, though they should, because they all work at the pleasure of the president there.
Look, I mean, the one thing I think we've all learned over the course of the last few months is whatever we expect to happen is not necessarily what's going to happen. I mean, who could have foreseen the resignation announcement from Blatter? What was that, 3 days, 4 days after he was reelected, overwhelmingly reelected? The one thing
that was bizarre, you know, to watch.
The one thing we have to bear in mind here, though, is, you know, there's a lot of talk, and, you know, people, you know, now Platini is too tarnished. That this is going to happen or that's going to happen based on what's going on with the Swiss authorities or the American authorities.
Right.
You know, the voting Congress has demonstrated over and over again, it doesn't necessarily care what, you know, Michael Lauver, the Swiss federal prosecutor, thinks, or what Loretta Lynch thinks, or what James Comey thinks. You know, just because those guys have been tarnished doesn't mean anything, or else that Blatter wouldn't have been reelected four times.
Right, and he wouldn't step down. And, you know, I've seen an interview with some of the African members of FIFA, and they are behind this guy because they say he's done everything he said, which is litter them with money as well. We go to this thing, Jeremy, we say, oh, the logical conclusion will be he'll step down and then there'll be some reform. But what you're saying is FIFA will always surprise you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but what about the U.S.? Because we're getting high and mighty here. U.S. soccer, Sunil Gulati, Dan Flynn, anybody, has there been any Americans named in any of this monkey business at all?
No. Other than Chuck Blazer, who's pretty prominent.
Him. That guy.
Yeah. Chuck Blazer obviously is central to this whole thing.
Yeah.
Unraveling, and Chuck Blazer, is second to none in terms of his role in creating the FIFA and the CONCACAF that we know today, however you want to characterize it. And certainly there are valid questions to be asked about, what did the U.S. soccer establishment know, and when did it know it? But right now, Blazer is the only American soccer official who has been directly implicated.
Well, and then you have Blatter, which is he's basically doing the Chauncey Gardner thing from being there, just like I like to watch. Apparently, he didn't get involved in any of this stuff, and now that's being eroded, that whole argument. Does this
– And Valka, too. I mean, there's so much – this is what happens, of course. It's very simple. I mean, when – you have the authority to act with impunity for so long, mm-hmm. with no oversight, with no consequences, with no repercussions, then you get something like this. I mean, these things don't happen in well-managed, transparent organizations, obviously.
Right.
And when you let them run things without any kind of counterbalance mm-hmm. from the authorities, and it's just a free-for-all, this is naturally what's going to happen. It was something that for years and years and years everybody kind of winked at and understood to be the state of things, but it's different now that there are actually, authorities involved.
Oh yes, sunlight's the best disinfectant. So I think this definitely puts Platini in a it definitely is a problem for him. Do you think Prince Ali spoke at this Soccer X convention? He spoke quite forcefully against Platini, and he actually was the man who took on Blatter when it when country wasn't cool. So maybe he'll have a chance. Maybe this has upped his whole game.
Well, it certainly can't hurt, but remember, this is a guy who was running against Blatter, for several months, who was in a presidential election against him days after these arrests took place,
mm-hmm.
in a culture where so many people were demanding reform, but, he didn't come close. He got 73 votes. Now, you could say that's not terrible, but there are other people. I don't think that Prince Ali is necessarily going to be the guy we see winning whenever they have this election, clearly. I mean, I think if they ran today, despite what's happened in the last few days, I think Platini wins.
Yeah, we have David Ginola, Luis Figo. It's going to be like the Republican Party. All these people are going to be lined up on the stage. We need a Trump. We need a Trump-like candidate. You know what? And I tell you something. What I laugh about, not Platini, but Blatter is he, and you were talking about it, he becomes so disconnected from the real world. It's almost like a Michael Jackson situation where he's surrounded by an entourage and he doesn't really know what reality is. So it's suddenly being foisted upon him. And, Jeremy, you're always there to cover it. We appreciate it. Jeremy Schapp, join us again on Over the Ball. Give us another update because, buddy, this is surely not over, right?
No, it's far from over. I'm counting on several more trips to Zurich.
All right, Jeremy, keep us posted. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, Kev.
Hey, football fans, this is Robert Flores. Coming up on the latest Football Today podcast, we'll get you ready for Thursday night's game between the Seahawks and Niners with Adam Kaplan and Mike Tirico. Plus, is interim coach Dan Campbell crazy? Download at ESPN.com/podcenter.
You know, here's a related note to what we were talking about with Jeremy and FIFA. The UEFA president, Michel Platini, or we call him Michael Plate here at Over the Ball. He's the favorite to become the next FIFA president, or he was anyway. He says he's talking about the image, FIFA's image, how it needed to be restored. You think so? And politics must be toned down in favor of soccer interests. And he said, quote, Sarkozy, Nicolas Sarkozy, never asked me to vote for Qatar, but I knew what would be good. So Platini said that, and he was acknowledging that politics get in the way, and he might have told an American official that he would vote for the United States in the bid for the 2022 World Cup, but changed his mind after a meeting hosted by then-France President Nicolas Sarkozy at his official residence in Paris, and it was also attended by, guess what, here's the big surprise, senior Qatari officials. Yeah. Our next guest is a soccer specialist and media consultant just back from England and the big Soccer X convention, where he had a one-on-one sit-down interview with Don Garber, an interview that made some news here and abroad. Welcome back to Over the Ball, Ben Grossman. Ben, how are you?
Hey, great, Kevin. Really happy to be here. Thank you.
Hey, so, man, that is a big, big deal over there, this Soccer X thing. Tell us a little bit about it, because I didn't know much about it.
Yeah, Soccer X is a company that puts on these big annual conventions. They do it in England once a year. They do some smaller ones around the world as well. And the one in England is kind of their big affair. And they bring in top execs from pretty much every team and league around the world. And it's just everybody gets together. There's a lot of big speeches and panel discussions and a lot of execs kind of doing backroom deals and stuff. It's pretty cool.
So when you watch these big execs from all these different leagues, is there a big dog? Who's the big dog? Which league wins out?
Well, this one's in England, so obviously the head of the FA who's walking around is getting a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
But at this one, there was Prince Ali, who's running for FIFA president, of course. So that was, His Royal Highness Prince Ali.
Yeah, to you. That's what I have people call me as well, man.
Yeah, I wish. And then obviously right now the transfer window had just closed. So there was a lot of buzz, a lot of chatter from the heads of like the Spanish leagues and, the French league and all that, just kind of talking about what had just happened, how basically, you know, the British spent $1 zillion and everybody else is trying to figure it out.
Yeah, right. I was just going to say the transfer market seems to be one way market. The market goes to England and then maybe the United States comes into that equation. But most of the money is going to England, right? Or go in other countries, but through England.
Yeah, it's really amazing. So the English Premier League has just, you know, closed this new round of TV deals. And in sports, that's where all the money comes from, is television. And it's the most popular league around the world, without a doubt. So they're getting a ton of money in the UK, but then they're getting a ton of money everywhere else, including here from our friends at NBC, who do a great job with the Premier League, who just re-upped their deal. So we'll be able to see Rebecca Lowe and everybody else doing their thing for many more years to come, which is fantastic. But the money coming in has meant that the teams there just have pocketbooks that people just can't compete with. You've literally got these tiny little teams who get promoted, like Bournemouth, now buying players for, you know, $5-10 million transfer fees, which is absolutely ridiculous. Forget about the fact that a team like Man City just spent £100 million on two players. Just two players, £100 million transfer fee money. It's gotten absolutely amazing.
Well, you know, here you are. You got the lower teams, and then you talk about the British Premier League, where, you know, you have the top four or five teams are always the ones that are the top four or five teams because they have the money. There's no parity, but it seems like every week is a tough game. I guess you can make the argument because of promotion relegation. But also, if you're Stoke or whoever spending $5 million, that's kind of like throwing a lawn chair off the Queen Mary, isn't it? Trying to just keep up with the Joneses?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, it's, you know, the league is struggling not to become a league of haves and have-nots, where you have the same teams, you know, at the top four positions every year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, though, because you've got teams like, you know, the team I used to work for, Crystal Palace, who, you know, literally in 2010, we almost went out of business, and now we're spending $15 million for Johan Cabaye, a French international from PSG,
right,
just because we stayed in the Premier League for 2 years and got all that TV money. So, the middle of the pack tends to actually be pretty fascinating, in addition to, you know, the relegation teams in the top. But, look, the money is still in the Champions League. There's no doubt about it. You get into those top spots, you get that Champions League money. and it takes you to a different level. The head of the French league who I spoke with told me that PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, makes more money off the Champions League every year than they do playing in the French league, which is, that's crazy.
Well, this shows you what the pressure is on the players to play all these games and to qualify, because it's all kinds of money behind it. And then, as they say, money changes everything. But, you know, here you are. You're an American media consultant. Do they make you sit at like a little tiny tray table in the corner or something? Or are we starting to get our due over there?
You know, we are finally starting to get our due. I'll tell you a real quick funny story. When I worked for Crystal Palace like 20 years ago, and I had to record this thing that people, fans could call in and hear every day called Club Call, they made me fake a British accent, honestly,
yeah,
because they did not want Americans heard. And actually, they started to get complaints. Why did you have an Irishman doing these things for you?
So I got that's what your accent was an Irish accent.
It was terrible, Kevin. So I got fired in like the first week. You're like, yeah, that's not going to work.
That's not going to work. Yeah, they don't want to hear your American accent either. So, because they would say you'd have no legitimacy. That's what I can't stand about it, this attitude that they have. The British haven't won the World Cup since 1966, and it was at home. Give me a break. They don't have all
the
answers.
So 20 years ago, yes, and even 10 years ago, maybe. But I have to be honest with you, Kevin, we've seen it happen, and I really saw it on this trip and being around all these execs, is that the American game really is starting to get a lot more credibility. It's really nice. Major League Soccer especially is starting to get a lot more street cred over there. You know, they've got a new television deal with Sky Sports, which is kind of the ESPN or Fox Sports of the UK. Mm-hmm. The games are on every Sunday there. They're on a thing called Eurosport, which goes all over the rest of Europe. And people are starting to see the games a lot more and realizing, you know what, standard's pretty good. And they're seeing, you know, it's not just guys like Stevie G and Frankie Lampard coming over, but, you know, they're hearing about players like Sebastian Giovinco coming over from Juventus and things like that. And it's starting to make a dent. So, you know, when Don Garber went over there to speak, a lot of people listened, and they brought over the president of the San Jose Earthquakes came over and spoke. Richard Motzkin, one of the big soccer agents from here in America, came over and spoke. They're really curious about how the American game is growing, and growing so fast, frankly.
Hey, so you had to sit down with Garber to one-on-one in front of a big audience, and you made some news. He was talking about a tournament that could be over here, or a Premier League game. What was that about?
I was really kind of surprised and impressed and happy about the fact that, you know, we had the chat on one day, and we woke up the next day and read all the papers, and there was coverage of our talk in almost every paper, which is fantastic.
Which goes to your point about MLS. They're talking about us a little bit now.
Yeah, it was really neat. So among the things Don spoke about with myself and then with some media members afterwards was, you know, the idea of at some point would there be some kind of little, you know, quote-unquote tournament where you take a couple MLS teams and a couple Premier League teams and we go at it every year or every couple of years or whatever. And it just kind of shows about the fact that MLS is kind of starting to go up a little bit. And look, it's incremental. It's not going to be some big turning point and suddenly, hey, we're a top three, you know, league, because we can't spend that kind of money yet. And again, like you said, it just all comes back to money at the end of the day, and we're not there yet as far as revenues coming in to be able to justify, you know, spending those massive transfer fees. But we're getting there. You know, we're starting to pay big money for some players who are still in their prime. I've said it before, Sebastian Giovinco, again, probably, you know, for me, outside of Beckham, the most important signing MLS has ever had, bringing in a player at that age from Juventus for that kind of money is fantastic. And so that's what happened. We had this chat about this thing with the Premier League and MLS possibly playing, and that made a lot of news. And, you know, Don also talked about a lot of stuff from promotion and relegation to the kind of players that are coming over.
Oh, boy. So, all right. Well, so Giovinco, I agree with, too. And the one great thing is, you know, he's in MLS, and then all of a sudden he gets an Italian call-up. So I think that's great news for the league. And now you touch upon promotion and relegation. You had a discussion with Tony Adams. I heard about that. What was that like?
Well, Tony Adams, who is a former kind of legendary Arsenal and England center back,
yeah,
and now is coaching over in Azerbaijan. He was there speaking as well. And by the way, my man can dress. He rocks these suits that I wouldn't even think about pulling off. So
in a good way or a bad way?
I can't decide. They kind of look like my grandpa's old plaid pants, but they work for some reason. So good for him.
He's a center back. Of course it'll work. He'd headbutt you if it didn't, if you said anything else.
It's probably a good point. So, so we just got an interesting chat that, you know, not off stage, not publicly, but, you know, there were a lot of people around, so I don't mind talking about it. And he was kind of, you know, taking some shots at MLS a little bit, just saying the standard's just not there yet. It's like equal to the, you know, the championship in England, which is the second division over there, as you know, if that. And that the one thing he said.
If that? Did he say if that?
Yeah, I mean, not, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't killing the league, but he was kind of trying to put it in its place a little bit. And the one thing he said that made my, you know, nails curl up, as it always does, is that MLS won't be a real league until there's promotion and relegation. So, and I know, Kevin, nobody in America has ever talked about promotion and relegation before, so maybe we should introduce the idea.
You know what? I tell you, whenever you talk promotion and relegation, people just freak out in one direction or the other. I want to do a show, a full show on promotion and relegation. But, I mean, I think it would be good. These are my feelings on it. I think it would be good, healthy, but it seems like American sports are in a certain way, built in a certain way, and perhaps, you know, you have an owner that's paid millions for a team and doesn't want to share it. Now, that doesn't make it right, but, I mean, do you think, look, you're talking to Garber. Did you talk to him about promotion relegation? Because people want it. They think it would be healthy.
I also think it would be healthy if I was dating Kate Upton, but some things are just never, ever, ever going to happen.
I'll drive.
Yeah, exactly. Look, you just said it. I mean, you know, you're talking about these teams coming into the league right now, or teams that have spent a lot of money building this league, owners who have spent a lot of money building this league. And if you're asking for a $100 million expansion fee, and now you're going to tell me there's a chance in 1, 2, 3, 4 years you're not going to be in MLS anymore, good luck with that. We just don't have the structure set up where that's even remotely realistic. I also, you know, look, it's a whole other conversation whether it actually would make the league better or worse and how many teams make the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But guys, I got to be honest with you. You can talk about it all day long until it's just not, it's not a business reality. So honestly, all the conversation about it, I get it. It's just kind of a waste of time.
Well, until the team owners see some sort of financial benefit to it, the point is moot, unfortunately. So whether the landscape changes, which you kind of don't think it will. But like, what did Tony Adams say? Why does he say that you have to have promotion and relegation and we won't be successful till we have that?
He thinks it just makes the competition of the league better, that there's something, you know, that if you finish at the bottom of the league, instead of getting the number one draft pick, you're tossed out of the league. You know, and that a league needs that to make it. I don't know. I think the NFL's doing pretty good, and the Jacksonville Jaguars don't get relegated.
I think the difference with soccer is you don't really quite, you know, college is just a farm system for the NFL, and they just, you know, farm who they want out of there. So that's sort of their development thing. So you can draft football players, but you sort of have to develop soccer players through you know, the youth development thing. So I think that's different, don't you think?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, like I said, we can talk about this till we're you know, red, white, and blue in the face.
Right.
But here in America, the way the leagues are set up, it's just not going to happen.
So he's not taking the bait, basically. On your one-on-one, that didn't come up.
No, I mean, I asked him about it, of course, because, like I said, it's a topic over there, and they wonder why, you know, people around the world wonder just why we don't have it, not often as, you know, with as much confidence as Tony does that we should have it, but they wonder why we don't. And so, you know, Don and I talked about it on stage.
All right, good. All right, so another thing that happened there, you know, Prince Ali was there and gave a speech, and now Platini's been linked to this couple of $1 million payoff with Blatter. Platini was sort of seen as the front runner to take, you know, to sort of take the crown from Blatter. Maybe that's been damaged a little bit now. Do you think Prince Ali is... What did he say, first of all, there, and what do you think of his chances?
So it's fascinating. It's a crazy story, Kevin. I'm sure it's going to change 100 times between now and February or whenever they rip it out of Sepp's cold, dead hands.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, so Prince Ali's there, and he's taken shots at Platini on stage, you know, wanting to distance himself from the old guard as much as possible, trying to put Platini next to Blatter, that whole thing to try to distance himself. And Prince Ali, when you listen to him talk, he could make you buy, you know, a popsicle in the middle of winter.
He's got the gift, huh? Nice.
Yeah, he's really good on stage.
As I said about Bill Clinton, he could talk a dog off a meat truck.
Exactly. So, he's fantastic, and he's a really good speaker, but the problem is everybody you talk to quietly there, you know, the team and league execs and everybody I talk to just kind of, everybody, you know, basically said, this is Platini's to lose. Like, he's going to win this thing going away, to the point of there was chatter about people who had backed Prince Ali before, the few people who had backed him before against Sepp. Do they shift their allegiance to Platini now just so they don't, you know, get caught out basically when Platini gets the presidency? Well, like you said, now there's starting to be some questions, and they're starting to chip away at Platini a little bit here. And, you know, who knows if Loretta Lynch is going to get her nails into him, too. And then that would make things pretty interesting.
Yeah, this could certainly change the parameters of what we're looking at. And you know, I think it's an interesting question for Sunil Gulati, whether he did back Ali, Prince Ali before. So, does he go to Platini? And maybe something like this $2 million payoff, maybe this is give him a reason to not go with Platini.
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, the other thing that enters into it is the 2026 World Cup has yet to be awarded. And before all this happened, remember, the U.S. was kind of understood to be the front runner to get to host the World Cup. And so you kind of, you know, if you're Sunil, do you want to back the guy who's going to win to make sure you don't lose the chance at 26? So it's pretty fascinating, all the stuff that's going to go into this. But the one other feeling kind of around the halls there was that this thing's far from over, that more people are going down as part of this investigation.
Oh, yeah, and Valky was amazing. You know, he's the executive ethics committee, which I think is so funny, an ethics committee on FIFA. It's an oxymoron. But, you know, Valky, maybe he's going to turn on Blatter a little bit. All right, so enough about them. I want to know something cool, because I also know that you saw Manchester City's training facility. What, $300 million they spent on that thing?
So I've never seen anything like this. Like, I have worked in sports and Hollywood and whatever for over 20 years, and I can count on one hand the times I've walked into something and just been absolutely floored. And this thing blows you away, Kevin. So the people who own Manchester City, who also, of course, own NYCFC here in the States, mm-hmm. have built this campus, this massive sprawling campus, $300 million. Just to put that in perspective, the great stadium they just built here in San Jose for the earthquakes came in a little under $100
million.
Oh, so, man. For a full 20,000 seat stadium.
That's a lot of money to play with. So that's, let's say, $100 million for the stadium, and then you got $200 million left over for what else?
It's just amazing. So field after pristine field, they've thought of every little detail to groom players and keep them happy. I mean, remember when we, you know, when you were playing pros and I was back in MLS and you'd want to play soccer tennis with the boys and pull out, you know, the locker room, you pull out two chairs and grab the athletic tape and run a string and there's your net.
Yeah.
They have a room just for soccer tennis with like this beautiful pristine net and floor set up and court, and they've thought of everything. And you walk around and you see, hey, there's the U-20s training. Oh, wait a second, who's their coach? Oh, that's Patrick Vieira, one of the best players of all time.
Man.
I mean, it's just one thing after the other. They're just set up with this incredible academy, this incredible development system, and it's just a different level. I mean, you walk around and you're just like, wow. If they put any of this resources into NYCFC as they continue to build the thing, which, by the way, I'm confident they will, it's going to be amazing to see how that franchise takes off.
Well, when you have that money behind you, I just make the argument, Ben, all the time, that when MLS is in discussions with a city, they have to have the stadium in place first. Otherwise, I think they lose some leverage when they award a city something and they haven't cleaned up the whole stadium problem yet.
Yeah, it's tough. Look, I know, you know, firsthand, the NYCFC has been very close a couple times, and mm-hmm. they've got a great setup in Yankee Stadium, frankly. I love it. I think it's really cool.
That's fun. Yeah, I've been to the games. It is. They've got the passion there, and it should be fun. It's just like, you know, you're playing at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I think you're right, and you know, Don Garber and everybody have said, you know, ad nauseum that, you know, a stadium is part of that kind of, you know, magical formula you have
right.
to have to get a new team. But I think, you know, when you've got Man City coming in, and you've got a New York City team and all of that, frankly, I love it, because I think it's great. I think whether you love them or hate them, NYCFC is exactly what this league needs. It's what Chivas
right.
USA wanted to be. You know, something that's owned by an outside team that you're either going to love or hate, that has a chance to be, you know, kind of like the Galaxy, the Yankees of MLS. You need villains, and right. NYCFC is a, you know, a perfect one.
And there's a sexiness to it, you know, being in New York and all. It's no Kate Upton, Ben, but there's a sexiness to NYCFC when you go there, for sure. So, all right, buddy. Well, I appreciate your insights. It's love when you talk to us here on Over the Ball. Let us know when you get your next interview or you're going. You're always at cool soccer stuff, Ben. You really are. You're always at good things.
Yeah, like you, I'm pretty lucky to work in this game, and that's just, you know, thanks to a lot of people who've worked hard over the last 20, 30 years to make this thing grow. So it's fun for all of us right now to watch this league and soccer here in general just kind of explode. I mean, what a good time to be a soccer fan here.
Absolutely. We got to keep it going. Ben Grossman, thanks so much, media consultant and soccer specialist, for joining us on Over the Ball. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care.
Red card for his shirt off. So Dominic Kinnear, he's been a guest here on Over the Ball. Great guy, great coach. My money is on him for the next U.S. national team coach. But, you know, he's trying to get San Jose into the playoffs, and they score a big goal. And this guy, Matias Perez Garcia, got a red card for taking off his shirt. Actually, it was his second yellow. But come on, man. You know what? You're playing. You're out there. It was in the 80-something minute, and he takes off his shirt, which, you know, I don't agree with the rule, but it's very selfish to do that. Selfish to your teammates, because what happened is he had a yellow card already, takes his shirt off. He lost his mind. Wasn't that great a goal? It was a rebound, a ricochet off a defensive player, and went in the, you know, faked out Nick Raimondo and went in the net, but he takes his shirt off. It's selfish. You know what? There's been times when I've wanted to do things on a field, whether it was clock somebody or get pissed, but you can't. You know why? Because you get thrown out. And it hurts your teammates. So the unselfish thing to do is keep your shirt on. Why don't you just take your pants off, Perez? For God's sakes, you guys are at the low end of the bracket there, and you're trying to get in the playoffs. Just concentrate. So the guys had to play about 5 minutes a man down. Nice, nice. All right, you know, last week was Think Taylor Concussion Awareness Week in the state of Massachusetts, the entire state. But obviously concussions and the lack of concussion awareness and concussion protocol is still a problem in this country as we try to get information out there. Where our next guest is the founder of Countrywide Concussion Care, a comprehensive concussion education and management program that provides impact concussion testing, medical support, and recovery guidance to the athletes of all public schools in the state of Florida. Joining us now to discuss what this all means, its founder, David Goldstein. David, welcome to Over the Ball.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so you listened to our show last week about the Think Taylor Week and Concussion Awareness Week. You have a very different story, but you're doing something basically in the state of Florida that we're trying to get Think Taylor all across the country. What can we learn from what Taylor's doing and what you're doing? What is your program?
So my program came about as a result of me suffering my third concussion in 4 years. This happened my freshman year of high school. Got a head-to-head collision that had me symptomatic for about 4 months. My head hurt so badly that it was hard for me to make it through the school day on a daily basis.
All right, so hold on. So you're a freshman in high school. All right, you're playing soccer.
Time, yeah.
Playing soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. So you go up for a head ball. You hit someone else's head, and then you called it symptomatic. What does that mean?
So I was nauseous for several weeks, sensitive to light and sound. As I just said, my head was hurting me amazingly badly for a long, long stretch, about 4 months. And it was just a nonstop struggle. I wasn't feeling like myself. I had to change everything I was doing because I couldn't get on the field and couldn't be my normal self. And it was a huge adjustment and a tough time.
So you were getting medical care at this time, right? Had you been diagnosed with a concussion and were you going through any sort of protocol at that time?
So the answer is no, then yes. So I started out, I got the concussion, and the next day I had a club soccer practice. I had gotten the concussion playing for my high school team.
Right.
And I just thought maybe I was a little bit sick, or I played the rest of the game even after the contact, after the hit, and then felt pressure to play the next day for my club team. And after that practice, I collapsed under the pain, and that was the sign that maybe something more serious was going on. But as we now know, that if you participate in athletics after you've been hit, it can make your recovery so much longer. And I think there's plenty of reason to think that not getting the right attention immediately kept me out for much longer than I needed to be out for. And so I started seeing some other doctors, but they hadn't been very good doctors, but they didn't have specific training in concussion management. And their advice was pretty much rest. We hope you feel better. Nothing we can really do for you. And we hope you get well.
Well, you've touched on two things. One, you know, Taylor Twellman had the same thing where he had a concussion. It wasn't diagnosed. And then you're very susceptible to second concussion syndrome. And you're also, you know, he can't work out at all now. So obviously to diagnose this very quickly is something that has not been a part of, you know, regular protocol.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the horror stories that you hear that get on the news of athletes of all ages, I mean, the ones that are the true tragedies, usually happen when they don't come off the field after the first hit and get hit the second time and have second impact syndrome, as you just said. And so I was lucky enough not to get hit again, but even still staying on the field probably prolonged my ordeal with concussions.
Sure. All right, so you're not misdiagnosed, but you're underdiagnosed, right? And so you continue to go from doctor to doctor. So you probably came up with your own protocol after sort of gathering this bouillabaisse of medical information.
Yeah, so you're exactly right in that I was kind of seeing I started to realize what I was missing in my care, and not just from specific doctors, but just having a support system, having multiple resources to contact, knowing what the right steps were. And eventually I found that at the University of Miami, they have a fantastic concussion clinic there with specialists who work with athletes all the time on these kinds of matters, both college athletes and youth athletes in the community. And once they helped me get better, it dawned on me that no one should have to suffer the way that I had suffered, just being in the dark with this concussion. And so that's when I decided to start this program, Countywide Concussion Care, to bring that kind of support blanket to my entire county, to all the public schools where they might not have the budget to support their youth athletes with this program, just so that kids didn't have to suffer the way that I had.
So what is it? What does it entail? So, you know.
So I raised about $40,000 the first year to pay for the first initial years of the impact test.
So, and this is when you're still in high school? This is when you're still in high school?
Yeah. This is my sophomore year after I had recovered from my concussion.
Nice. You're giving back already. Very good. All right. So you're a sophomore. You've gone through this concussion. You start this countywide concussion care. You raise $40,000. Congratulations. So you put that money towards baseline testing for everyone in your county?
So baseline testing within my county, and then also setting up concussion education seminars and really getting the information out to different schools, to trainers, athletic administrators. Now, this is a real issue, and we're creating a program to have a real solution for this type of injury. And so over time, we got it integrated into the school system while I was still in high school. So the money that I initially raised covered the testing and the education and the flyers. And now that I've moved on to college, I still am running this program, and a couple years in now, it's been an amazing success. If you look at the numbers who are coming into the clinic, the amount of awareness that has been raised in the county, and it also led me to be invited to help spearhead the effort to pass youth concussion legislation in Florida, which was a successful effort. That legislation stipulates that it just gives guidelines for return to play that are mandatory throughout the state, and also spreads education through a parental consent form that has parents know what the risks of concussions are before their child plays sports at any level.
And yeah, then you just arm them with information so people can make a more educated decision and take it out of the hands of not only the player who's been injured, but out of the coach, who might send them back in. I mean, you yourself said that you felt pressure to go back in, which all players feel. It's a natural inclination to say, I've got to be in there. My teammates need me. So this sort of helps players not have to make the decision, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember you and Taylor talking about it last week on the show, where different players are trying to make the decision for themselves, mm-hmm. and then coaches not wanting to take them out, and yeah, I mean, the pressure's at the professional level, but it's there at the youth level, too. I mean, so many kids want to win. They're trying to play to get scholarships, but it all has to be kept in perspective because it's a really serious injury, concussions.
Yes, more so than we believe. You know, you used to think ankles and knees were bad, but, you know, your concussion, you just kind of walk it off, but you don't. It stays with you. Well, countywide concussion care, you started as a sophomore. You passed some Florida legislation. You're off to a good start, young man. We thank you for the work you're doing, and we're going to have to hook you guys up with Think Taylor, because this sounds like a program that's happening in Florida, baseline testing for all athletes. Is it regardless of any sport, or is it soccer players?
So the baseline testing is for my county that I'm providing for, mm-hmm. but it also other counties have hopped on using our guidelines. So we have an established program to go county by county and give people the resources to set up a similar program. And so that's what I'm also looking to do. So if anyone's out there who sees the need in their county for an established program, we're happy to give those guidelines.
All right. How can we get more information on county awareness, countywide concussion care?
So the name of my website is countywideconcussioncare.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then the website for the University of Miami Concussion Clinic is uconcussion.com.
All right. Well, David Goldstein, congratulations on all the great work you're doing. You've taken a bad situation and decided to help others, and seems to be the spirit of what's going on around the world these days. So we appreciate you being on Over the Ball, and talk to us again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and thanks so much for taking this important issue into account and really dedicating your time on your great show for this. So thanks a lot.
You got it, David. All the best.
Yep, appreciate it.
Stoppage time.
We asked you last week to tweet some ideas about how to combat concussions and ways that we can improve the protocol and the game without slowing the game down. Here are some of your ideas. All players should wear soft gel helmets. I don't know. I would not be opposed to that. I don't think it's a helmet either. I think those bands, the gel bands, which they tried to make sort of mainstream a few years back, but that effort has stopped. Maybe we can start that up again. Here's another one. Have one concussion substitute. The player would be given an ample amount of time to be diagnosed, say up to 30 minutes, and the team would not play shorthanded. So that would be a substitute that would go in and play for the person that has a concussion. It would be interesting to watch how coaches would try to game that whole thing, unfortunately. Three, completely take it out of the manager's hands and put it in the hands of the medical professional whose calls cannot be overruled. That would be a doctor who is on par with the head referee in a referee's uniform. So, all right, that's so a legal authority there, a medical authority and one who's a referee. All right, another one here. Have another player from the other team be forced to sit while a concussion is being diagnosed, so both teams play with 10 men. Wow, that creates a lot of other things, because now you're punishing the other team taking out a player. But then the other team could say, hey, you're putting in a fresh player, and the guy's getting a 15-minute break, so, oh man, this is endless. And then the last one was, hey, if you don't like it, play badminton. Well, that's, I don't know how responsible that is. Play badminton. If you've ever gotten your bell rung, and you look at some of these players who have had concussions, it's nothing to laugh about. Hey, thanks for your tweets, everybody, and your ideas and your comments. Over the Badminton should be the name of the show. All right, everybody. Remember, we'd love to hear from you. You can tweet us at Over the Ball, like us on Facebook, or go to overtheball.com. But make sure you download us at ESPN.com/podcenter. For ESPN and Over the Ball, I'm Kevin Flynn, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn. For more podcasts, check out the PodCenter page on ESPNradio.com. Are leading the NFL in points per game, while the Jets defense allows the fewest.
Gronkowski's got a touchdown!
They collide this Sunday with first place in the AFC East on the line. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio.